To make his own son, Monty Alexander, on piano with Bob Marley's Running Away. It in fact comes from Monty Alexander's album. That was his 1999 album. And that album was titled Stir It Up. He's one of my favorites. And so versatile, very versatile in all these various musical genres. This is Lead Stories. I'm Patrice Lead. And the government is bracing for a shutdown even as we speak. I'm so sick of this, really. I think this should precipitate a move by the people to shut these people down when they do things like this. They can't agree, the Democrats particularly, the House can't agree on what the order should be and how they pass two particular bills. One was Joe Biden's Build Back Better, and the other one is the social bill, both of them costing gobs of money, and there's a deadline. Yeah, you guessed it. Today is that deadline. And they're still talking, even as I talk, about, well, they're not sure they will meet the deadline. You see, this is irresponsibility in the extreme. This is your job. You're a legislator. You're a national legislator. It is your job to formulate and pass a budget on time. Because while you are not going to be immediately affected, you have your salary still in play. It's still going to go on and you will still be paid, which is why you're so calm. You suffer no real consequences for being lax and for failing to do your job. Your job is to produce a budget. Your job is to pass a vote. That's your job. That's what you get paid to do. And it goes without saying, it is a reflection of the complete breakdown and lack of leadership within the Democratic Party. Nobody has to destroy the party. It's destroying itself. You have all these folks getting paid and paid well to do this job. You have their leaders, people like Nancy Pelosi, the speaker, people like, what's his name? See, I'm getting so worked up. My head is scrambled. You have the House Majority Leader, Steny Hoyer. You have Chuck Schumer. You have all these heavyweights, all Democrats, and they can't produce what they're supposed to produce. And let's not forget, you have the big man himself. You have Joe Biden, who apparently doesn't see that it is important to call your people up and say, get in line and get this done. I ain't asking you, I'm telling you. This is their version of the madness that seems to have taken over the country. Everybody's doing whatever they want to do. It's total chaos. Nobody's in charge, and everybody's in charge. All at the same time. You know you have a very important task to do. You know you have to produce a budget. You know that a lot is riding on this. And here we are at the very brink of the precipice. And these folks don't have a vote. They don't have their act together. They're not so sure. So that because they haven't taken care of their business and no one has seen to it that they've taken care of business, there's a very possibility that the government might shut down. What kind of nonsense is this? What kind of garbage is this? So here's what I would suggest. We shut them down. Shut them down. Everybody who could not produce a vote and everybody involved in not passing these budgets, get them out of office and make it clear. That's what we're going to do. You can't do your job. You got to go. You still have your salary, so you're not worried. You're not worried. And it becomes a theoretical exercise. It becomes a, you know, a kind of experience. We're not interested in experiences, your personal experience, your personal or political experience. We're interested in you doing your job. You can't do your job. Let's get you gone. And let's make it clear that that's what we're going to do. You have people panicking here in the streets. You have people very, very nervous about tomorrow, let alone today, but tomorrow. How could you possibly think that this is acceptable? And Biden, you're the president. You are the guy, the top guy of this cabal that is acting like a bunch of discontented children. And at the same time, oh, we could do what we want. We've got the votes. We could do what we want. And nobody would harm us. Nobody could do anything to us. Well, I think we should prove them wrong. And don't forget this. This is ridiculous. The whole country seems to be out of order. And the last thing on people's minds, Republican and Democrat alike, is that people's lives are hanging in the balance. People are already dealing with maximum pressure in their lives. They don't need this kind of stuff. They don't need to carry the added burden of, oh my God, what will I do if? You want to prove a point? You want drama? Let it be in your life. And we should give you some drama. Immediately launch a campaign to get those people who can't produce a budget on time to get them out. Because that is, in my view, tantamount to an open confession. I can't do the job you elected me to do. I can't do it. I haven't been able to produce the result. And all you have to do is to get some kind of order in your disorganized organization. You round up the people who can deliver the votes and you get a vote. How tough is that? It's because it's ego. These people are ego tripping. I occupy a very important position right now, and you will have to respect that. You will have to recognize and respect. That's what you have to do. You can't make me do what you want me to do. Yes, we can. And this is my view. You can't produce what you're supposed to produce. You have everything at your disposal to do your job. The fact that you guys cannot get your act together, and you have a leader now who is looking like he is going further and further into the universe, cutting himself off from reality. Nobody is there to basically bring the herd together and cast a vote and get on with business. You must be kidding. And people should tolerate this nonsense? People should pretend that this is serious? It's not that serious. It is what you're supposed to do. Last year, you knew you had to do this. This year, you had ample time to be prepared, to be forewarned. And all of your leaders suddenly are impotent, incapable of bringing their own people together to cast a vote and get on with the business at the same time that people are suffering. But you have an ego problem. And in the end, people should see that they, in fact, are responsible. You thought you were electing people. No, these are egomaniacs. They want to flex their muscles. Everybody is fighting for, you know, some time in the headlights, some time on the screen. And this is great drama. You can't ignore this story. It puts them right in the middle of it. They're going to argue, well, we were thinking we should do this and we should do that. Whatever the heck you were thinking, that was for you to do intra-party. That's your job, to get together with your other Democratic people and discuss things and come up with a solution. But no. If we do things the way they should have been done, it would be too quiet. And there will be no TV cameras. Nobody would catch the drama and see you at the center of it. So you make the drama, which is why I have no compassion at all on this matter. Get him out. This is a major breach. This is a major offense against the people. You're wasting time, you're wasting resources, and you're increasing the pressure on people that they don't need. They don't need any more of it. It only confirms they made a bad choice in electing you because you can't do your job. You can't do your job, you gotta go. Simple as that. We don't have time to coddle people and to, you know, give them some sympathy and say we understand. We don't understand. You getting paid, we are not. Which, by the way, is the next portion of my discussion today. The people themselves share the blame. Because we are conditioned to do nothing when our so-called leaders nonchalantly engage in this kind of shenanigans. And it's only because they are certain their paychecks will not stop. They're like petulant little children. Well, we can't survive with petulant little children in office representing us, allegedly. We got to get people we know will represent us and do their job. You're not doing us a favor. You're doing your job. We have to get serious with our leadership. This cannot stand. This is not the way to do it. Causing people unnecessary panic. You would want to know what it means to somebody who doesn't know how they're going to pay the rent to hear this kind of stupid news? Who has no more money in the bank? That you're having difficulty arriving at a consensus. You're all Democrats, for crying out loud. Is there nobody who can figure out how you bring all Democrats together someplace and you come up with a solution? Then you don't deserve to be there. You can't figure out how to deliver a vote, how to work with each other and solve a problem. You want drama. You want the television cameras on you. You want to stand at the podium and make speeches because you know your check is coming. And you need not worry about whether you have gas in your car. Okay, I need to calm down myself because I feel the temperature rising. And at my age, you know, you got to be careful about things like that that creep up. And then somewhere, something hits you and you go, oh, my God, I forgot. I should have taken my pressure pills, or I should take my hyperactivity pills, or whatever it is you take to calm down. But this really, really got me this morning. The big news is that people are preparing for a government shutdown. If it comes to that, right off the bat, I'm telling you what we ought to do. Hit the streets and get them out. Single them out and let them know you're coming after them. Let me take this lovely little break, compose myself, and we will continue right after this. So now you know why I love this music. It calms you down. It certainly calms you down, brings down the pressure a little bit, and you can begin to act yourself a little bit. Okay. And what I wanted to talk about from the very beginning of the program, actually, was I wanted to talk about the fact that as of today, in the state of Florida, there is a law that goes into effect that guarantees a minimum wage. Now, that may not sound like a big deal, guaranteeing a minimum wage, but you have to see it in perspective. This is the world's largest economy, at least that's what we're told. And we have had, the most recent wage increase, minimum wage increase, was in 2004. When it was $6.15 an hour. Are you hearing this? In the greatest economy in the world, people had to fight to get this passed. And when, in fact, it was passed in 2004, it was at $6.15 an hour. Then it went from that to $8.56, then to $8.65 an hour. Wow! A miracle! In the greatest economy in the world. That's what people were earning who were earning a salary at minimum wage. Don't forget, just this week, the people of Puerto Rico won a guaranteed wage as well. We will have a very good friend of mine, not available today to spend as much time as we need to discuss it, but they had people working full time for slave wages. And I don't mean to disrespect slaves at all. Now, in the state of Florida, the minimum wage is $10 an hour. But people are working toward a $15 an hour goal. And even so, we find in Florida and all over the country, people, employers can't get people to work. That's how they're expressing disgust and contempt for the notion that their work is worth that little money. This comes from $6.15 an hour for grown people with families to feed and bills to pay. $6.15 an hour in the largest economy in the world. Does that make sense to you? And people have to fight and suffer and work additional jobs to make some kind of money that helps them pay their electric bill and their rent and to fix their car so they could go to work. So this, just the same, is being considered today in Florida a victory. Hard won, but it is not a permanent victory. There's much more work to do. We have to deal with this question. What do people expect of those who are working class or lower working class? They don't deserve to live. They don't deserve to make a decent living. They don't have children. They don't have rent to pay. They don't have groceries to buy. The guy who drives the high-end car, has a mansion on the water, and has people working in his home, those people have children, many of them, who have the same needs as the man's children. They go to school, they need books, they need to be fed, they need clothes. And you mean to tell me that that man and his wife could see the merit in them making ridiculous amounts of money, while the people who clean their house and wash their car and take care of their children could barely spare a scrap or two? That is unbelievable. I wanted to talk about that. What are your views about this business of the minimum wage? Why should we talk about the minimum wage? Why shouldn't we just talk about a fair wage? What is the minimum wage that we, by law, could get people to work for? And that very often means overtime, meaning their time. They're still working, but they're not being paid overtime. And they're being clocked at minimum wage for the time that they're working, just the same. What is the fairest way to compensate people who are working on the lower rung of the ladder? That's where they are. That's where they're placed by virtue of all of the things that are considered. When people look at you for a job that you're applying for, and they want to know all kinds of things, including things that have nothing to do with the job you're applying for. But I thought I would ask your thoughts about that. What is the fairest way you think that people should be evaluated, and the fairest way to assure them a decent wage? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's share what you are thinking out there. Zabby from New York, you're first. You're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. Again,
hello.
Thank you so very much for what you're doing to help people so that they can stand up and speak out.
And thank you.
Yes, I mean, this is a wonderful training ground that you're providing. And I now can, I heard you're the beginning of everything, and actually I have been making calls to all the committees that are in charge here, and I've been making calls to Speaker Pelosi and to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and
Kamala Harris, Vice President.
No, not her. I'm so sorry.
Oh.
Actually, I'm thinking of, I have her name right here, just a minute, a very wonderful person. I heard her, and I couldn't believe how great she was doing. And I called, and I already had her called her once to compliment her, but she's from Washington State, and her name is Pamela Jayapal.
Oh, yes.
Pamela Jayapal. She now is...
Pamela Jayapal.
Yes, thank you. Pamela Jayapal.
Pamela Jayapal.
Yes, Pamela. Is that right?
No, it's Pramala.
It's a P-R?
Yeah, P-R-A-M-A-L.
Oh, Pramala. Oh, very nice. Thank you for that correction. All right. Well, it's just time for me to tell you about another thing that I've been doing for many, many years now, and that is influencing and trying to help people and encouraging people to run primaries against the incumbents, those very incumbents that can't get the job done. And I was inspired by your first 25 minutes, actually, and thought that I would be commenting on that before you introduced the low wage. But, of course, to get the things for the people, now I have in front of me the wonderful Franklin Delano Roosevelt's Economic Bill of Rights, Not many people know about that, but interesting, a few rights, and you're going to love to hear those, the right to a useful and remunerative job in the industries or shops or farms or mines of the nation. Second, the right to earn enough to provide adequate food, clothing, and recreation. Number three, the right of every farmer to raise and sell his products at a return which will give him and his family a decent living. And number four, the right of every businessman, large and small, to trade in an atmosphere of freedom from unfair competition and domination by monopolies at home or abroad. The right of every family to a decent home is number five. And number six is the right to adequate medical care and the opportunity to achieve and enjoy good health. And the next seven is the right to adequate protection from the economic fears of old age, sickness, accident, and unemployment. And number eight, the right to a good education. And all of these rights spell security, he says. And after this war is won, well, see, this was in Franklin Delano's time, and these are his rights. And we have the Black Panthers 10-point program. We have the Young Lords 13-point program. And we have been fighting all these years, and I bring this back to 1944. This was his annual 1944 annual Franklin Delano Roosevelt's Economic Bill of Rights was in his 1944 annual message to Congress on January 11th, 1944. So we have been sitting around and seeing these people not doing the job all these years, not getting these things that we need, like including the wage, which should be way over 15, not a goal. It's going to, you know, that I don't even have to tell you. But in any case, that would be certainly one of the many things that we need to get for the people. We need a government for, by, and of the people. You see, of the people. We need people like you and me, ordinary people, to be elected. And we need to, besides going to these people and saying, we're going to come after you. No, you say, I'm going to come after you. I'm running a primary against you. But usually I suggest to people just to make that a surprise party, because you do not need the permission of any of the bosses, the party bosses, to run a primary. Oh, no. You just get a list from your board of elections of all of the voters in your party, and they have the addresses, and they give you that list, and you go to the houses, and you get signatures on a petition, and you meet the people in your neighborhood, and you have to not do it, Johnny-come-lately, 1 month before the election, and say, I want to be you have to prepare. You have to work. You have to be getting a name for yourself in the community, doing things that people recognize you from wherever. And I have some websites that are now over 10 years old. Actually, 10 and a half years old. And one is called Run Primaries. That's R-U-N. primaries.webs, and that's plural webs, W-E-B for brilliant, S for strategy, .com, runprimaries.webs.com, and I'm from Suffolk County here, Long Island, and so I also have suffolkelections.webs.com. All my websites, I actually have nine. I also have some other websites, too, and links to those, and other people's websites as well. A link for public banking, for instance, like the Bank of North Dakota, over 100 years old now. Not a credit union, but a public bank. There's many things there. I've put so many things on during the years. it's quite amazing. But I hope somebody will go there. And New York State law is down there giving a person an idea of how to run a primary, why to run a primary, giving them some of the ideas for a platform, and the idea, most importantly, that you cannot do it by yourself. I'm interested in getting people into the local level of politics, which, and I mean not the state level, not the federal level, but the local level of politics to change your own neighborhood, to make changes, just like in Seattle, the wonderful socialist leader, she got the $25 an hour wage up there in Seattle. That was a city, of course, but it's like it's a municipality, and because the population is so much bigger than a town, it's called a city, and they have a mayor. But in the towns, we have supervisors here in the towns of Long Island, and so some of our towns only have 5 people running the town. That means if you just get 3 people with a common cause, so that you can be unified, so that you're not in fact destroying yourselves within yourselves, like you were pointing out, that the Democratic Party is destroying itself from within. It doesn't need anyone to destroy it, I think you said. And the same thing.
Yes.
You go with 3 people. Well, first of all, there's usually 7 seats that 7 actually 7 other offices. There's county clerk or town clerk you can run for, or town superintendent of highways, and a town assessor, and there's other things besides usually the 5 seats that rule the town board, you know, the town board. And so you can get 7 people, 8 people all running for these different things. You can share the cost of the election literature, of the signs. You can get together. You can all go together to meet the candidates' nights and as a group. And you can do it, because I've seen it done. In 1997, it was done in the town of Riverhead, where a party got together, the Main Street Party, they called themselves, and they swept the all-Republican board that was in control of the town of Riverhead in eastern Long Island, and so in Suffolk County. And so I had plenty of good examples, because, you see, what I did was meetings law. And so that's how I got to learn all of these.
Cut out there for a minute. We didn't hear you.
Say that again?
You were off the air for a minute. We didn't hear you.
Okay, what was the last thing you heard?
About people getting together, considering changing the political machinery in
the
town.
Yes, that's right. And the reason I'm saying that is because I learned this by going to town board meetings and taping them with a public access camera, a free camera that you can get from your cable company, to go, and you can take it to town meetings, people can take it to the council meetings, and then they can put some of the people who come up and speak, they can put those meetings, those people who want their voices heard, people who are asking to get in the town, for instance, make it that the legal wage would be $15 an hour or $25 an
hour.
Well,
we get the general idea that you're communicating, and it's a very important and vital idea that you're sharing today with us. And that is, you don't have to go along with this program, but you do have to find yourself researching a little bit, doing some groundwork to figure out what is the best approach to just getting in there. You have to plan it, of course. You have to have some kind of plan to succeed. But you do not have to accept the status quo. You don't have to accept it.
That's right.
But as Zabi says, you have to organize.
Yes.
In order to do an intelligent job of deciding before you even decide whether those things that are required are things that you can do right now. You can begin right now to at least put it in your head, you are going to change this equation. You have all that you need, except you just have to focus on all the specifics, get them addressed, and get going. You don't have to put up with this.
That's right.
Zabi, I thank you so much. I think you missed your calling. You should be a public speaker and a motivator.
Oh, thank you very much, Eutrice.
Thank you so much for your call today.
Okay.
Henry from Chicago, what are your thoughts?
Greetings, Eutrice. Hope all
Greetings.
Is well with you.
I'm hanging in.
You know, it was interesting, the last caller, what was her name? Gabby?
Zabby. Zabby.
Z-A-B-B-Y. So, you know, she had some very interesting points. And one of the things that's so interesting is, you know, she brought up the rights, the financial rights of people. I think it was, who was that?
FDR's Economic Bill of Rights for workers.
Yes. And
yes.
What's so interesting is, you know, most of the great social and religious leaders in history, they don't bring anything new. They just remind people what has already been done. When we're talking about Jesus, Muhammad, Martin Luther King, they just remind people, and you've said this too, the plan is already there. We just have to execute it. So I think that's pretty interesting. She brings up an old economic plan from 1944, which is still viable today, which, you know, we can basically argue on. And so, you know, I don't understand why people don't incorporate this in, you know, in demands that, you know, we need to bring to the politicians. But, you know, Eutrice, I wanted to ask you this. The numbers for, you know, the number for the minimum wage, how is that calculated? Is that just something thrown out there? Does somebody do research and say, this is you know?
It's a very sophisticated thing. It is also quite secret. I still don't know what the formula is for determining, and just up to yesterday, I was looking for answers around that. I couldn't get anything specific about how the minimum wage is determined.
Because I was trying to find that too, and I'm like, how is this calculated? Because, you know, you have to look at certain regions in our country, and, you know, certain parts of our region have higher costs than others. And, you know, here in Chicago, they just passed a $15 an hour minimum wage, but that's not going to go into effect for the next 3 years, which, you know, is going to be obsolete. And, you know, you probably can guess, you know, just like any other person can guess, and I know Chicagoans know, that $15 an hour in Chicago is not going to, you know, help you live a very financially safe life here. You know, we're talking about rising costs of property taxes going up, all these different businesses are raising prices. I mean, living in Chicago is in the actual city is expensive. And, you know, it gets to a point in some areas in Chicago, I would say a lot of areas in Chicago where, you know, and if you have a family, you have to make at least six figures. So, you know, I just wanted to know, how is this minimum wage calculated? Are they putting into the factors of, you know, family life? You know, if you got a wife and children, are you sending those children to private school, public school, groceries, some of the stuff that you had raised earlier? You know, are they factoring this stuff?
We don't know. I couldn't find out. I made a note to myself that's the next thing I'm going to do. How do we calculate the minimum wage? And and then market it as a fair thing. It is fair.
Yeah, because
I don't know how they do that.
Yeah, because that is an actual, you know, because if you put statistics behind it, then, you know, maybe it could compel some politicians to, you know, make sure that this is the fair wage that we need passed, you know, as I guess minimum wage, if you want to look at it from that point of view. But yeah, I don't understand it, because, you know, we also have people who argue against it for some reason or another. I don't know why. But,
yes, you do. You know why. And let us explain and explore that. Why the care and the hubbub about the minimum wage? What does that imply?
Well, that basically implies businesses that have to pay all of their employees a certain amount. So you can't, like, you know, go under that amount in regards to, you know, pay. But, you know, my thing is people who make either as much as me or less than me, you know, arguing against it because it's going to hurt, you know, businesses. And I'm like, why should you care that,
I was hoping you'd give us the answer today, because that is the question. This business of the minimum wage is a kind of secret talk. What is it the secret for? When they talk about the minimum wage?
Got me on that one. That's why I called.
Really? Okay. Well, let's see if Jackie from Brooklyn has an answer. Thank you so much, Henry. Good to talk with you today. Jackie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon to you and the listening family. I think the answer to the question is profit motive. It doesn't, that's the whole basis of capitalism, that you maximize profits and you keep costs down. And the worker is not really seen as an individual human being. So that's my short answer. But I wanted to add on something. I'd like to add on something. The other concern is this. Like in New York, I live in New York. They just passed a city council bill that says, like, the DoorDash workers and these different food delivery people, they want to make sure that they earn a minimum. I don't remember how much it is, but they passed some type of legislation. But there are whole groups of people, and this is where the whole issue about immigration comes in, that works far below even the minimum wage. And they're not even calculated in this whole process. And a lot of it, I don't know about other cities and states, but I know in New York, a lot of the economy in the food service industry and different industries, these people are not even paid minimum wage. So that's a whole nother problem that's never, ever discussed. So recently, the food delivery people, they formed an association, and I think that's how they were able to get some minimal amount of money that must be paid to them. But this is a real problem, and I never knew about the FDR Economic Bill of Rights, but that's still very, very relevant today.
No question about it. For years, we've been speaking a double language, and that's what I want to get to. If, you know, it doesn't look like we'll get to it today, certainly we should get to it as soon as possible, and that is the question of the minimum wage. Why would explanation is we want to guarantee everybody's rights, including those people who are on the bottom rung of the economic ladder. But I believe there's a whole different thing going on here. and it's been going on for years. What do you think about that?
Well, I think there's the two groups of workers, too. You know, there's the wage earner, the 1099 W-2 kind of worker, and then there's lots of other workers that are not W-2 1099 workers. And I think both groups are being taken advantage of. And I agree with everything that everyone said. We don't have politicians that even represent those classes of people's interests. So that's the problem.
Boy. Okay.
Call.
Thank you. Thank you so much for contributing to our discussion today. Don't forget, tomorrow is Free Your Mind Friday, so you can add on to what you started talking about today. But there is a big story about this issue of the minimum wage. And it is used rather surreptitiously to give people a sense that it is about protecting the rights of workers, all workers, including those workers at the lower end of the economic ladder. But that's not it. There's a whole different reason and purpose for this minimum wage. And when we pursue this subject further, you'll see why. It's like a magician doing a magic trick right in front of your eyes, and you can't see it. For some reason, you can't see it. But it's been played out right in the open, right in front of everybody's eyes. And we just can't tell that there's a trick being played here. And we need to understand what the trick is. I want to thank you all for calling in and contributing so meaningfully to our discussion. And this is what this program should be doing, which is to help you express yourselves, because there's so much valuable information. We got a classroom lesson today from Zabby. We got a classroom lesson today from Henry and from Jackie. We got a classroom lesson. She still needs some more time to finish it off, but this is what I'm talking about. We have information. We have intelligence. We just don't have, we haven't taken the time to really think about how smart, how powerful we are, because we yield all the time to the powers that be. We give them the room. We give them the priority. It's time to claim your space. And don't be afraid of it. Thanks for joining me today. And we'll talk again tomorrow. It's Free Your Mind Friday. And anything goes. Bye-bye.